This crown was truly royal. A bowl like I had never seen before, with dark chocolate antlers and even back scratchers that stuck behind his antlers about 6 inches. To top it all off, he had that classic spiky junk mature Roosevelts are known to get on top of their antlers. This bull is a lifetime 6x6 Rosie for anyone who hunts public land like me. And the best part was, he was only 30 minutes out of town, so I could easily spend a lot of time with him. And I did. After 5 encounters and 1 arrow flung, I'm extremely grateful for an action-packed season with a giant bull. He had over 30 cows with him. And for the entire time I spent with that herd, I never saw a single spike or satellite bull. He had such a royal crown on his head. No other elk dared to challenge him for his giant herd. And if they did, they did not stick around to prove it. In my mind, he earned a name, and I called him the King of the Canyon. First encounter, September 11th. On September 11th, I was excited to hit the mountain. Being a longtime blacktail hunter, there's something about the first rain of the season that truly gets me excited. I just knew that the animals would be moving that day, and I was mostly right. In the first hour of daylight, I saw 11 deer. For the sunrise, I decided to begin in a cut where I had seen some elk sign before and try bugling. You know how it is being a solo hunter and making cow calls in the dark. Every noise you hear makes you want to jump out of your skin. You can't help but imagine that a cougar is coming up behind you, but I guess you wouldn't hear it if that was the case. Well, there I was, in the middle of the clear cut, after I finished my very unprofessional bugling sequence. I was quiet for about 15 minutes, and it was still too dark to see. When suddenly a doe starts blowing in front of me about 15 feet away. I about passed out from a heart attack. It really got my blood pumping, and partially to be a jerk, but also to try and get her to shut up, I pointed my bugle tube right at her and just let it rip. And she ran so fast I couldn't believe it. She was 100 yards away in 3 seconds flat. The rest of the climb that morning resulted in some old elk rutting sign like rubs and poop from August, and lots of does, but nothing to make me stick around long. By mile 3, I was already soaked with water sloshing around in my boots, but I had to push through, because just over this mountain, and then over the next one, I was sure I would find a bull ready to play the game. Here in the West, at least in the Northwest, we live in a salad bowl. Food is not a limiting factor where I hunt. Water is not a limiting factor where I hunt. Out here, pressure is the limiting factor. I use it to my advantage, either by catching elk pushed down into deep holes by other hunters, or by diving into the steepest canyons and creek bottoms where the elk do go to get away from roads and trails. As I traveled, I called. But in this now 6-mile jaunt from mountain to mountain, I had yet to hear a bugle or to even jump an elk. I came to a point of the hike where I was very worn out. The rain stopped, the fog burnt off, and suddenly it was a very pretty clear day. I decided it'd be a good chance to sit on top of this mountain and eat some lunch, and I'll bugle off of this hillside. I spent about an hour in that spot, bugling every once in a while, before moving around this brushy draw. When suddenly, maybe a few hundred yards across the opening, maybe just 100 yards away in the timber, I heard a very weak, bedded down bugle right on the other side of this blackberry filled mess. I took about 5 seconds in shock to realize what I heard, and then suddenly that's when the adrenaline rush kicked in. My heart was pounding hard, and I had to catch my breath. There's just something about hearing that first bugle that really gets me. I bugled back, and I waited, and then I bugled, and I bugled some more, but this bull just would not respond. so I just thought I would have to dive in after them. Man, that was one of the slowest, thickest, nastiest blackberry hedges I've ever traveled. Rather than going around it, I just decided to make a straight line to the last place I heard the bugle. It took me about 45 minutes just to get 150 yards down this draw to the other side where I thought the elk were. But by the time I got there, the only thing I found was a blacktail shed. But at least I had something to take home to my son. I tried going down through all of the little hidey holes they could have been, but I had never found them or their tracks. Instead, I ended up in the steepest big hole of my entire life. Super thick brush all around it and just this almost vertical hole right down to the bottom of this creek. The creek even waterfalled down into this thing, but the sign proved to me that the elk live in this hole. So I decided to make the hike back to my truck and come back to this spot another day. That day ended at 12 miles and 2,600 feet of elevation climb with wet feet the entire day. Second encounter, September 18th. Over the next week, I studied my map like my life depended on it. Every spare moment, I tried to come up with a game plan. What I landed on was to head into where I thought the elk were, but from a completely different direction than the time before. Rather than approaching from on top of the mountain to the north and diving in, I wanted to come in from the other side of the draw on the south and see if I could catch them going from feed into the hole. What I didn't know is that this section I chose to ascend is nearly vertical. One of those spots that's so steep the trees don't grow on it. But the sun was rising and I had to beat the thermals before they would pull my scent down into the hole. So I activated goat mode and climbed up on all fours. And once I finally got to the top, I made a very important discovery that would impact the rest of my elk season that year. There was a very well-used bedding area right on top of this ridge, looking down over the direction I just came to the south. And also on the other side was looking over the hole to the north. So they were on top of this ridge where they could see everything. There was not much fresh sign in the exact moment I was standing there, but it was obvious that at one point the elk spent a lot of time there. I called this spot the main bedding area. There was even some fresh rubs to tell me that a ruddy bull was up there at some point this year, but once again, probably in August. It was another wet and foggy day. I continued to trudge up the hill, though it was not as steep as it once was. I was becoming more and more conservative with my bugles, and instead resorted to just cow calling. And when I finally made it to the top, which was some real easy to walk in open timber, I heard a bugle far away straight to the west, what seemed like it was close to the main road. And in that moment, I was for sure it was a person. It was so far away, and the main drag that goes up into the mountains that everyone takes to drive right past where I'm hunting, everyone can pull over there and bugle. It just seemed like a person would do that. I tried bugling back, but once again, no responses. So essentially, I ignored it. And I continued on with my loop that I had planned all day long. And eventually, I did make my way through the hole, up on the hill, and then back down into the area where I'd heard the bugle that morning. And that's when I realized I had made a huge mistake. The area where the bugle came from was extremely overgrown and thick, and the little road that I had imagined, the little spur road that I had imagined a hunter was on, was not accessible hardly at all to the main road anymore. I had to use my pruners and cut a trail through it just to get to the main road. And to top it all off, the entrance of this road had become a popular trash dump for some of the jerk-offs who shoot their guns up there. Ultimately, it was way further from the road than I thought, and there were lots of big, fresh rubs only hours old. I knew that because I tested the trees and rubbed them with my knife to see the color they were when they were fresh, and when I came back through only 30 minutes later, the rubs looked older. So that's how I knew this is definitely some fresh. I might have even pushed the elk out of there on my way in, but that's where I heard the bugle from, and it was definitely a bull. That's definitely the moment that makes you tuck your tail. You know, you make the decision, You think it's not a bowl, and then it turns out being a bowl. I tried to track them for as long as I could, but I lost sign in a super dense vine maple patch. And with no answers to calls, sunset was coming fast, I thought I just have to get back to my truck. That vine maple patch actually became so thick that I couldn't even push through it with all my strength. I've never been in a vine maple patch that thick. It was thicker than blackberry bushes. And it actually, the way that the vine maple patch was oriented, it actually pushed me back out onto the road. And then that's when it suddenly clicked for me. And I now understood that there is this big thick buffer that the elk have between the road and the main bedding area that is either a vertical cliff or unpassable brush, and the elk are just safe. And that also helped me understand why maybe this guy wasn't liking bugles too much, is because he sits there and listens to people bugle from the road all day long. I was hot on sign for hours that day, and I hoped I could at least get another bugle or maybe even a satellite bull from the herd to come in, but no. I was starting to realize there actually weren't very many bulls in this small drainage I was hunting. But I had gotten two bugles, and I found some secret little elk bedrooms, so I would be back. And that day ended with 9 miles and 1,700 feet of elevation gain. The third encounter, September 21st. I was starting to get real antsy. This kind of worried, sick feeling I get when I'm completely obsessed with filling my tag. I now spent every spare moment on Onyx, watched hours of archery elk hunting videos. 3 days went by before I could go out again. And this time, I brought my friend Ryan with me. We tried a different approach to the elk this time. So instead of coming from the north or the south, we climbed through a huge clear cut from the east to try to get into the area that I'd been hearing bugles. We got there to be walking through the cut as the sun rose. No calls yet. We didn't want to call anymore unless we were breaking brush or if we were on really fresh sign. And we rose with the sun. As the gray light passed and we could start to see, a big flock of quail busted just before we crested this hill that overlooked the last section of clear cut before the timber. And then boom, just as our line of sight passed over it, standing there on high alert, no thanks to the quail, is this big old herd of elk. At that point, we only saw cows because they were halfway in the timber, and we couldn't even count them before they were gone into the trees and sprinting for cover. We could hear them crashing through the whole hillside, but I knew exactly where they would go, back down into the hole. Unfortunately, Ryan was sick that week and not really up for that extreme of a day, so we hunted around the easy property and found where the elk had spent the night feeding and moving. But then after Ryan went home, I immediately dove into that bedding area and quickly got back on fresh sign, and I could smell the elk. You know, when that many elk run single file down a trail, they're not very hard to follow. To my surprise, the elk didn't barrel all the way down the mountain into the hole. Instead, they stayed up high and went into that main bedding area I had found on the 18th. I decided to just move painfully slow and sneak down the elk highway, avoiding sticks and just making little timid cow calls when I heard some brush just on the other side of the vine maples. I knocked an arrow, the wind was perfect. I let out some lost cow calls and the whole herd lights up with the most excited chirping, and then I hear them just moving around a bunch. They start moving down the hill just out of sight on the other side of the vine maple patch. And that's when I realized these dang elk are gonna win me. They keep talking to me though, and very quickly shuffling down the hill, so then I match them. And we're both going down the hill at the same pace with a strip of vine maples in between us. Finally, when we all stopped, I let out my best chuckle, which is not very good. And immediately from 80 yards away, the bull rips off a bugle. And at that moment, I thought for sure it was going down. My next move, I started raking. I picked up a good stick and just started smashing this little tree next to me. The cows are all still moving around at this point, but they're not chirping anymore. And then I made the same mistake I made the very first time I heard this bull and the time after that. I bugled. I just can't help it. There's a bull bugling at me. I want to bugle at him. I should have stuck with my chuckling plan, or maybe even switched to cow calls. I don't know what. But as soon as I bugled, I learned this bull is either a big wimp who just doesn't want to fight, or I'm a bad bugler. Because those cows froze and the forest went dead silent. My next move, I just felt like I had to cut the distance while staying out of sight. And luckily the brush between us was so thick, I just started pushing through it and walking toward them without being seen. I ended up getting pretty close, and so I bugled while moving into the herd. This bull's behavior was not what I expected. And so if this bull knows about another big bull that can somehow beat him up, I would sure like to see him. But he does not want to fight. Still, I have not seen this herd bull yet, and I'm hoping that this herd has some satellites, some spikes, anything in it. I just want to fill my tag. Eventually, I do sneak up to where I can see the herd, and man, it's big. But I don't see the bull still. He had already began leading his ladies far away around the foot of this ridge. If you imagine the ridge like a foothill running straight west, he's taking them around the toes and bringing them back up into the other side away from me. I watched them move along calmly because they had not seen or smelled me yet. And then I decided to give them about an hour to cool off just by very slowly tracking them and glassing in the brush to be sure that I didn't get too close or get winded. Once again, I have to say, it is so easy to track a herd of this size. After a while, they led me back up and around to the top edge of the steep drop-off that I had climbed up the first time. And then that's when I saw the first cow's butt. She's feeding on some sticks, maybe 75 to 100 yards away in the open timber. At this point, I'm feeling very call shy. So I just decided to take it easy, hang out with the elk for a little bit, and try to glass up the bull in the brush while they're walking around feeding in the timber. Well, turns out, I didn't need to look for long to try to find the bull, because he found me. I sat down and took my boot off to shake some rocks out. There was a big ledge above me, and what I'm about to explain to you sets the stage for how smart this old bull is. He set a trap. At this point, he still probably thought I was a bull, and he thought that I was gonna come follow in the herd and try to take some cows for my own. So what he did, while he led the cows back up into the main bedding area, he came back down on the top of the ridge and overlooked his own path to watch me come in. I had just started putting my boot back on when I looked up, and probably 30 yards above me is this giant mature Roosevelt bull staring right down on me. And it's over. All I ever saw was his head and his antlers. And he turned in such a way that I never even saw his body. And then I hear that sound that we all hate, of a big bull busting brush in a beeline down the mountain. The cows all took notice, but they didn't seem to trust this bull too much since they never really ran. They only walked in a single file line down after him. I counted 22 cows. This time, I only waited about 30 minutes, and I made the decision to go down to the hole and make another attempt at sneaking up on them. I mapped it later, and they traveled 675 yards, but it was much harder to track them this time. Because they weren't spooked and running in a straight line together, they all kind of split up, and then they crossed back over some areas where they had walked earlier in the day. So at this point, I'm having really mixed emotions. On one hand, I feel like I may have blown my only chance at a nice bull this year. But on the other hand, I felt very hopeful that God would allow me to cross paths with him again. So I started praying, and partially I was praying because I would be on tracks for 20 yards, and then I would lose them for 20 yards. And then I'd find a nice fresh pile of poop, and then I would lose them again. And then I started to notice these little tiny green fresh plants poking up through the forest floor, and that became a great way to track them because when they snapped over, they would wither and turn crunchy within like 30 minutes. And so that's how I knew that the elk were still nearby, because I'd find those little broken over plants that were still soft and green. But I kept losing tracks And it went on like this for an hour, and I was just praying and asking God to guide me to them and to help me not mess it up when I finally got to them. This prayer walk eventually got to the point where there was no sign at all. I was really just going off of faith, and I was just walking in a straight direction into the hole. And by now, I was back toward the bottom of the hole. And I found this big, huge, old timber log to sit on. So I climbed on top of it. It was maybe 7 feet in the air. And I just started eating some trail mix. Not 30 seconds later, I heard brush start breaking, and then it grew into the thunder of elk busting through the trees. Unfortunately, because I wasn't paying enough attention, they were bedded down only 30 yards from where I sat down to eat. I mean, thank you, Jesus. Sorry that I blew it again, but that's pretty cool. So I prayed for yet another opportunity, and at this point, I was so desperate, I just began immediately following their tracks, and I even started bugling because I knew the bulls saw me, but the cows didn't. And I was still hoping there might be some satellites nearby. They stayed on their feet for another hour or two, but they were not running anymore, just walking. At one point, I found a smashed tree where the bull had gotten angry at me and just went to town and destroyed this elderberry bush. And then finally, I once again caught up to them. And this time I stood there for a while, just watching them. They were just in this old reprod stuff that was too thick to see the sky, but thin enough to walk through. And I didn't even knock an arrow this time. I was about 100 yards away. The elk didn't see me yet. I was just looking for the bull through my binoculars. And unfortunately, I ended up blowing this opportunity too, when the wind shifted and the elk went on high alert. And then I put my binoculars back in my harness, and one of the cows saw me moving my hands, and she bolted. And then I finally saw the bull following right behind her. And then the whole herd takes off once again. At this point, they had led me through 3.5 miles of brush and 1,000 feet of elevation gain, and I was getting really worn out. Plus, I was nervous about pushing them too far because I didn't want to push them into the next drainage I didn't know very well, or to push them across the road into an area that I couldn't hunt, some closed warehouser land. But the direction they went actually was my way back to the truck. So once again, I bumped them about a mile later when I was just trying to get back home. At this point, they have looped around almost all the way back to the hole, but I lost them after that. I have no idea where they went. So I just went ahead and climbed out of the draw and headed home, got to the truck right before dark, and was just thankful to God for the opportunity to spend 6 hours hanging out with a big old herd of elk with a nice bull. And even if they didn't want to hang out with me back, it ended up being a good day. I did 10 miles that day, and the whole time I was just hoping for satellites to be around, but I learned that he is the only bull, a giant. And it was at this point that I realized I may have been in the presence of royalty. The fourth encounter, September 25th. That week, I was fixated on the fact that this bull only ever busted me with his eyes. I had the wind every time I've interacted with these animals. They also had stayed within the same general area for the last 3 encounters. That gave me the great idea that if I just had a decoy, it would be a sure thing. That bull would be dead meat. If he was looking over at me walking up the hill and then I had a decoy, maybe I could have got a shot at him. The only problem is finding a decoy within a few days before September 25th is no easy task. It's harder to find an elk decoy than it was to find an actual elk. I tried Sportsman's, I tried Cabela's, I tried asking strangers on the internet. Then someone gave me this great idea. Just make one out of cardboard. And I remembered that at my church, we have a giant printer that can easily do 4-foot-tall printings, which happens to be the size of a very popular portable elk decoy on the market right now. After downloading some images off of Google, printing, cutting, taping, and setting it up, it looks pretty good. My hope is that he will not immediately run off when he hears my cow calls, and that he'll give me a chance when he sees my decoy. So I went to the same clear cut, and sure enough, God is good. There they are, right where I left them. This time, I get a good long look at the whole herd just calmly filtering into the trees. I counted about 30 cows this time, and still just one big old king of the canyon taking up the rear. Man, he is such a nice bull. I do the normal program, sneak around to their bedding area, and start still hunting very, very slowly with my decoy out in front of me. It took me about 2 hours moving into the timber since I last saw them enter the trees, and I'm starting to get a little lazy with my still hunting at that point. Not to mention, I had lost tracks. So at this point, I should have just slapped myself in the face to get out of my stupor, but the elk beat me to it. To my dismay and horror, I walked 20 yards away from my bull, and he saw me first. He jumped up and ran, and then I cow-called. Lo and behold, my homemade decoy actually worked. He stopped perfectly broadside and stared at her for about 4 seconds. The only problem is, he stopped 70 yards away, and there was no way for me to draw my bow without dropping the decoy on the ground. Plus, I'm just not going to shoot 70 yards away with the bow ever. In that 4 seconds, none of the elk moved. They all froze, and then I cow-called once more, and that was the starting gun, and they all ran faster than I've ever seen that herd run before. They must remember me, is what I thought. I tried to do a repeat of the hunt before, but this time it started pouring rain like a fountain from the sky, and all those tracks were washed away in minutes. It was ridiculous, and I wasn't prepared for torrential downpour, so I was back to square one. I found out the hard way that my decoy was not waterproof. I hung my head, tucked my tail once again, and went home. Only 6.5 miles that day and 1,400 feet of elevation. The fifth and final encounter, September 27th. Season was so quickly coming to an end. I had only 2 more days to hunt before it was all over, but every time I found the king of the canyon, I was getting closer and closer. First it was distant bugles and learning the layout of their home, and then they took me on a tour around the mountain. Finally, my decoy stopped him at 70 yards, and that was the last time I saw him. But at this point, I knew exactly where they would be, and I knew where they'd be if they weren't there, and I knew where they'd be if they weren't there. In the 2 days between these hunts, I could barely sleep. I spent more time on Onyx than I did anything else, and I could only think about these elk. There was a moment when I was at home sitting on my knees playing with my kids when I picked up my 3-year-old and rocked back to sit on my heels. This motion put a ton of pressure on my big toe and I heard a pop. I still don't really know what I did, but it hurt bad and I could barely walk. Like if I was an old man, probably would have ended my season then and there. I could barely hobble from the kitchen to the kids' room to help put them to bed at night. But man, I had just seen the king of the canyon, and I knew where he lived, and I knew where he slept, and I just had to go in, broken foot or not. So I woke up early on September 27th, and I drove out to the woods, gingerly hitting the gas pedal with my messed up foot. Once I got to the woods, I was moving real slow. About every 50 yards, I just had to sit down and get off my foot for a minute. At this point, I knew I couldn't pack out an elk even if I killed him, but in a way, it really helped slow me down, so that once again, 2 hours into my still hunt, I had only moved a mile and a half. I also felt like I had messed up these elk so much that I wasn't cow calling, I wasn't bugling. I strongly do believe that in this year, 2024, the bulk of the rut happened in August. And I didn't think that any of the cows in my herd were in heat at this moment on September 27th. So calling I didn't think would be as helpful. I just wanted to work the wind and limp along and come up on them bedding. I was down to needing to sit down every 20 yards after limping through the sticks. And it really gave me some opportunity to calm my mind and just pray. First of all, my prayer that day was just a thank you for an awesome season with a giant Roosevelt. But I did ask that God would give me one good opportunity, one chance to finally fling an arrow. I was not on fresh sign that day, Instead, I was just limping through the bedding area, looking for white butts and black antlers. I approached from above as the thermals came up into my face from down the hill, and I expected to see them bedded down facing over the edge of the drop-off. My foot was burning in pain at this point. I was almost ready to call it quits. There was a small log at the very apex of this hill that I thought, if I could just make it there, that's a great place I could sit for a while, I could have lots of good open timber to look into, and that'll be my final destination. My foot was hurting so bad. All I had to do was make it to this log. And with no fresh sign yet that day, I wasn't sure if I pushed them too hard over the last few weeks and they were gone. I was pushing through some bushes, hobbling, trying to get to the top, and just when my line of sight was cresting over the knoll, I heard a whoosh, and three cows stood up. One of them was only 20 yards away from me, and then my heartbeat stopped. Standing directly in front of me, about 60 yards away, was the king. He stepped forward out of his bed into a position where I could see his entire body, but his face was perfectly blocked by a 12-inch tree. His antlers stuck out either side of the tree, and we were all frozen. They couldn't quite see me yet. They had only heard me. The closest cow just stood looking at me, but she was behind a thick vine maple tree and couldn't quite make me out. I knocked an arrow. I ranged the bull 60 yards, and I just stood watching for what felt like an eternity. This time, I really got to stand and look at his antlers. He was a big, classic 6x6 with the darkest antlers I've ever seen. On top of his highest fork were some nubs and spikes sticking up, like the kind that true coastal Roosevelts eventually get. He wasn't crowned out like some of the other big bulls I've seen, but this was by far the biggest bull I had ever encountered while hunting. He turned his head to look the other direction, and I could see the profile of him now, and his top points turned backwards to create these long daggers that we call back scratchers. With his head blocked still, I started to inch forward. I no longer felt any pain in my foot. I slowly crept straight forward. The closest cow still just watched me without moving. I moved forward about 10 yards and went back to check the distance and realized I had dropped my rangefinder. I learned the hard way last year not to shoot without checking distances first. So I went back to get it off the ground, and then I went back forward again. None of the elk moved a muscle. They were all just looking in my direction. But the bull had once again turned his head, the tree still blocking his vision of me. The way that I had not quite crested the hill allowed me to see the whole torso of the bull, but not his legs. I was worried that if I aimed low for the heart, my arrow might bounce off the top of that knoll or hit a stick and somehow injure him. So I made the decision to shoot for double lung about 12 inches down from the top of his back. Time slowed. I was no longer making conscious decisions, but instead was doing my robotic movements that I had practiced daily for months. I ranged him at exactly 50 yards, and he just looked like a big 4x8 sheet of plywood standing there. I had practiced the 50-yard shot and was very comfortable taking it. I drew my bow, set my 50-yard pin on the mark, took a breath, and released my arrow. And that's when I learned something important about shooting at animals at long distance who are on high alert. They can move much faster than an arrow flying toward them from 50 yards. This moment is burned into my mind so clearly. At the sound of my bow going off, he vertically drops down a full 16 inches. I watched the arrow make a perfect, beautiful arc right where I was aiming, except there was no elk lung in that space anymore. Instead, he put back his beautiful antlers, catching my arrow with his back scratchers and snapping it in half midair. My jaw hung open. This animal is a survivor. This bull is an arrow-dodging ninja who knows antler kung fu. He then runs forward another 5 yards with his head once again blocked by a giant stump and his body sticking out, but not enough to see vitals. Remember that cow who was 20 yards away this whole time watching it go down? She still hasn't moved at this point. The whole herd just stood watching their king in a face-off against me, the apex predator. I had to step to the side to see his vitals, and that was the last move I ever made with these elk. As soon as I changed directions, the cow that was close had enough and started walking away. And then the bull followed, and then the rest of the elk slowly walked away. I waited until they were just out of sight and tried to cut them off from up above by staying out of sight and running along the top of the knoll. I let out a desperate cow call, and all the cows excitedly talked back to me, but they never stopped moving. It was them saying goodbye and good riddance. They gave me a shot, and I aimed too high. My foot pain suddenly came back hard. I needed assistance. I called my buddy Jericho and had him come to my rescue, but he was 3 hours away. Plenty of time to let the herd calm down. I hobbled all the way back down the mountain to my truck. I took a nap, and the whole time, my foot just burned with this intense searing pain. I had totally overdone it. We tried to get back on the herd, but I was too weak to continue, and the king lives on. In the last hunt of the season, the 28th of September, we tried to go out the next day, but I was so crippled up, we could not hunt effectively. We called and called and called from up high, but I knew better. This bull is uncallable. He has seen too many hunters. Also by now, I had not seen any fresh rut sign, such as rubs, for a week. He was too smart. I was too inexperienced. And this bull's a survivor. I am surely confident he will stay in his deep dark hole that only I know about throughout the whole rifle season. By this day, if he has not already been shot, he's safe. I know that he's going to live, and that I'm going to get to be the first guy to go down after him come September. Hopefully this time, I can catch him when he's horny and ornery. But if not, I'll do the old timber stalk and try to recreate what I experienced this fall. You know, the biggest lesson I learned from this experience actually applies to far more than just hunting. Although hunting is a great way to hone this skill, it's the ability to trust God for guidance and direction, believing that He will guide your path. Truly, I'm here to tell you today, God guides your life if you let Him. Even when we are going blindly, we can be faithful to our call and know that God will make our path straight and lead us to the ultimate goal of becoming men after His own heart who make a difference for the kingdom of God. Next time you're in the woods trying to follow tracks that keep running out on you, think of this verse and say a prayer that God would show you how real it is. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to Him, and He will make your path straight. Learn this by living it out in the woods. Then you can apply it to the rest of your life and know that God's plan for you goes beyond your understanding. Whether it's in your marriage, your career, your family, as you learn how to be a human being, trust in God. Make Jesus the Lord of your life. Dedicate yourself to Him, and you can trust in Him to make your path straight. Thank you for listening. This has been episode 2 of the Oregon First Hunting and Fishing Special Thanksgiving Episode Drop.